The following presentation was recorded at the 2000 Teachers Workshop at Faith Builders. More information on Faith Builders events at fbep.org.
This is a workshop on physical education in recess. One of those things in school that you either probably love or hate. And I've always enjoyed them, especially physical education. Call it phys ed. And being in high school, I've not had a lot of experience with the elementary, and so I've asked a couple of elementary teachers to supplement what I'm offering here, and so they'll be coming up here after a few moments. Let's begin with prayer. Lord, we thank you for our bodies. Lord, as we take a few moments here this afternoon to think about how we use them, how we can train them. Lord, it is, I feel a tremendous gratitude for the body you've given me. Lord, for the bodies that we see here, and the people they represent to us. Lord, I pray that you'd give us wisdom to know how to think about our bodies, how to think about how we use them, and how to teach our children. So, Lord, give us real wisdom today, and lead us and guide us into all truth. In Jesus' name I ask. Amen. I've been fascinated in the last number of years with the examples that the Apostle Paul uses in the New Testament and the sports analogies that he uses. If you think about it, he says, I run. I don't run like one who beats the air. He says, no, I don't run that way. I run to get a prize. He says, I'm running for the prize. Another time that he says that anyone who competes in a race, or let me say it this way, not everyone who competes in a race gets the prize. But he says, you run in a way so as to get the prize. Okay? Now, what's he hooking into there in our experience? He recognized, he knew that people would understand that analogy. Everybody knows what it's like to run a race. Somebody has to win. Everybody wants to win. And he knew that his readers, and interestingly enough, even you and I today still know what it feels like to run a race. And so Paul's examples really communicate the intensity, the single-mindedness that is called for in our Christian lives. And so phys ed and recess, I think, take on a dimension there. I don't know that Paul is exhorting us. I don't think we can read there legitimately that he's saying we should have races, or that we need to have phys ed, or that we should have recess. I think it demonstrates simply that was an understood, shared activity. Everybody knew what he was talking about. And so, in some way, I think it also demonstrates that races, in some ways, are a little microcosm of life. They relate well to all of life. I'd like to just to give you a few examples of fitness in the Bible. Again, I'm not so much trying to provide a rationale here. I just like to have us think about how physically fit were people in Scripture. Okay? Of course, remember when Israel had to march around Jericho for 6 days, and then on the seventh day they marched around seven times. That's quite a little walk. And we are left to assume that marching is more hard. Have you ever tried to march? It's harder work than just a little stroll in the park. Elijah, in 1 Kings, ran for about 20 miles. It says he ran. Well, and then he fled another 90 miles. When Jezebel was after him, he fled for 90 miles. Now, we don't know exactly the timetable, In fact, given what we know about our endurance nowadays, we're sure he didn't do that all in one stretch. Okay? But the fact is, in a very short time, on foot, he ran 90 miles. Anybody here done that? I don't think so. Mark 6:33 says people ran around the Sea of Galilee to go to where Jesus was going. He went by boat. Now, either there was no wind, or it took him a long time to row, or it was quite a little ways around that. We know the Sea of Galilee is small, but try to run around it, see how small it feels. Matthew 15 says that Jesus walked to the districts of Tyre and Sidon. Given where he was, he must have walked some 50 miles. John 21 says that Peter swam to where Jesus was from the boat. And given what we know about the measurements, it must have been about 100 yards that he swam. This last spring, I had my high school students run the 100-yard dash a few times in preparation for the final day of school, and there were groans. Okay, that was running. You ever tried swimming 100 yards? Well, Mary Magdalene went to the tomb to look for Jesus. He wasn't there. She ran back. We forget how far she ran. It must have been about 3 miles. Peter and John, as soon as they heard, found out, they ran. John won. He got there. He outran Peter and got there first. So Peter swam the 100 yards. I'm not sure what happened with the race. Well, how about the walk to Emmaus? We know that was about 15 miles. They walked. Saw who Jesus was, turned right around and walked back. And we think we do well to do our brisk 3 mile a day, you know. We're in good shape. Well, if you go to Haiti, you know that people walk there. And my pastor, who was already moving toward his 60s, when he was going to go to Haiti, he had been there before. Guess what he did the second time? He started walking several weeks before he went. Because he knew that he was going to be tested when he got there. Well, I want to touch on this a little bit more as we think about a reason for teaching phys ed and a reason for giving some thought to how we handle recess. But more about that later. I want to read an excerpt from Howard Hendricks' foreword that he wrote in a book called Your Body, His Temple. And just read you a couple paragraphs. Even though man has been on earth for many thousands of years, he knows very little about how his body works. Unvarnished facts stagger the imagination. 60 trillion cells function in a typical middle-aged American man. Each one is a microscopic city with power stations, a transportation system, a communications network. Raw materials are manufactured and waste is disposed. Each cell operates efficiently and polices itself to keep out undesirables. This remarkable mechanism is nourished by a splendidly rich 75,000-mile bloodstream and is presided over by a 3-pound gray and white mushroom, a brain, of 30 billion neurons, the myriad functions of which have never been even remotely duplicated. When I as a person understand that I am made in the image of God, that I am so infinitely precious to the Creator that Jesus Christ died to save me, and that God wants to show Himself through my body, then it matters very much how I treat this miracle of flesh and blood I have been given. Today I want to just cover several areas. I want to look at a rationale or a reason for phys ed and recess. We want to look at recess a little bit, and have a few other teachers coming up sharing a bit on that, and then looking at phys ed. At the end of the session, I'm hoping to have enough time to allow you to share some of your ideas that you might have. Could be games, could be activities, things that you've done, ways that you've set up your class. My syllabus is one example. I'm always amazed at how many different good ideas, great ideas, I hear from other teachers on how to structure their class. And my syllabus probably represents the ideas of five or six teachers, ideas I just pulled from other people, things that have worked for me. So I think it'd be good just to be able to hear from, for each of us to hear from a few people about what has worked well for you. Okay, why teach phys ed? Number one reason, I believe, is an issue of stewardship. It's a body that we've been given. One of the things that we've been handed in Western civilization is this idea, an old Greek idea, that the physical is bad and the spiritual is good. Now, the Greeks had the games. That's where a lot of these games started, was with the Greeks. However, the idea began to get passed on that our physical bodies, we have them, they're necessary, but when you think about the spiritual, there's really not much connection. That is not a Christian idea. Christian idea says that our bodies are created by God and that we're to offer our bodies as living sacrifices to God. If our bodies were bad, God wouldn't want to use them, would he? But the Bible says that they're good and that we use them. Now, Paul says that they've been instruments or slaves of unrighteousness, slaves to sin, but we don't have to keep it that way. Our body is good. We have some instructions given about how they're to be used, how we dress, all of those things. But the body itself, but what I want you to hear today is the body is not bad. And I want you to think about how that what implications that has for how we teach phys ed and recess, and actually it can relate to a host of other things. But the body is not evil. Our bodies are good, and they are part of who we are. And it's impossible to disconnect one part of who we are from another. It affects us. So if you can have your quiet time while you have a stomach ache, it might indicate at some level your spiritual discipline, your mental focus. Okay, but how about after a good night's rest and no stomach ache, and you have your quiet time? It might be better. You might have a longer quiet time because you're not distracted. One example, let's talk about emotional distress. Obviously, if you're stressed out emotionally, it's going to affect your body. You're going to be tired. You're going to feel sluggish. You're not going to feel like doing anything. Each of those factors are connected to the other. Paul says, may your spirit, soul, and body be preserved complete. Why does he include the body? It's important to remember that not only will our spirits be raised up at the last day, but our bodies will be raised up at the last day. It's interesting that God values our bodies. Now, we'll be given new ones, redeemed, but it says that our bodies will be raised up. And so, Paul indicates that our bodies are valuable to God. It's created by God. So there's the issue of stewardship. Then there's the issue of coordination and development. Just a couple examples here. You know that small muscle development happens about 6 or 7 years of age is when that affects the eye movement. That's why we don't start reading much before 6 or 7 years of age, because the small muscles of the eye develop the coordination required to read at about that age. And so other studies have been done that coordinate motor skills, how a child is able to use their body, with their ability to learn and read. And so recess, especially in the elementary, can be effective there. And so that's one reason that we do it. Number three, the benefits of exercise. One of the reasons we have recess in school is just that we all know that we need a physical reprieve every so often. We have to get up and change position, run off some tension, some stress maybe. They've been studying hard, focusing. It's healthy for us just to be able to dump whatever we've been doing mentally and emotionally and just get out and do something completely different. And physical exertion actually enables us to be free again mentally, emotionally, to focus again. And so there again, the physical activity has an impact on how we're able to think and how we are able to deal with things emotionally. So what we do then is try to equip people so that when they get older and are out of school, that they know what is going to help them handle stress. One of the things that we've haven't dealt with very well in our society is inactivity. Your day today has been spent sitting. Okay. Now, this is just a 1 week or 4 day workshop. However, you're also teachers, which means you spend most of your time either standing or sitting in a room with people, unless you go out with them for recess or phys ed. Many people today sit behind a desk, sit behind a computer. We don't spend all day, let's say, cutting trees by hand with a cross saw, lopping off the branches with an axe, rolling them by the use of levers onto a sled pulled by a team of horses, and then balance ourselves on that sled while we move down to... You see what I'm saying? That is strenuous physical labor. 50 years ago, that was not all that uncommon, especially if you went to the hills of Kentucky. They were still using horses in some of those activities. Well, our lifestyles have changed a lot. I think it changes the way we look at physical activity. I have to think about how I'm going to get physical exercise as a teacher. I have to think about it. And a lot of your students will as well. They're not all going to be active physically. Even a farmer today may get up and go out to his air-conditioned cab, back up to his piece of equipment, and go out and click a few things in place and spend the day moving a few levers in that air-conditioned cab. Okay, even farming is no longer highly physical. So one of the things that I do in phys ed is I teach people how to monitor their body's fitness. And we do a variety of things to help them do that. So a rationale for phys ed. Our lifestyles have changed. We often have more stress. And physical exertion is a great way to handle stress. And then I have the word wholeness listed there on your outline. By that I simply mean, refer back to that, this overhead, is that if we're going to be whole persons, we cannot ignore the physical. You might love books, you might enjoy great conversation, but if you ignore completely, in terms of diet and exercise, your body, obviously you're going to have trouble somewhere. So, just the whole idea of wholeness. And then number four, recreation. Notice the word recreation. We're so used to it, we sometimes fail to notice. It's recreation, recreating. Teaching people how to recreate. As people, we don't create like God did, out of nothing. We take the tools of creation that God has given us, and using creativity, we create. Physical recreation is one way to do that. Individual, in that there's ways to do that in a very rewarding way, individually, whether it's jogging or swimming or walking or any number of activities that you might think about. And then there's group recreation, which involves working with people and getting involved in those ways. Okay, that's a little bit of a rationale. I'd like to just give some time now to Patty Musser, first of all, and then Brenda Beachy. And what I've simply asked them to do is just come up and share a little bit. What is their purpose for recess? What do they hope to accomplish? And how do they go about it? One of them has a schedule to present, and I'll just let them share what they have. Give them a few minutes.
I like recess. Some of the things I want to have happen during recess Have fun. Be a good sport and get your exercise. And I said I like recess, but probably not as much as my students do. Have you ever asked your students what their favorite subject is and they said recess? Well, I don't quite like it that well, but I'd be probably satisfied with one recess per day, but they like it. And they like when you join in their fun. And if you join in their fun and participate and have fun with them, they'll probably more quickly join in what you think is fun. One reason I like it is I get a feel for my class personality. If I stand off and watch the game, a game that's going well, you can see how different students relate and react and what kind of character they have without me being the initiator of the activity. Some games I like better than others, and I like to help with Centerline, probably 23 Eskimo, one of the better ones. And I teach first and second grade, so whatever I say you can alter to fit your grade level. But remember that your students may not enjoy the same games you do. And sometimes I pick games, and sometimes, most of the time, I like to let my students pick the game. And we have a rotation. I like to have one student each day pick the games for that day. And then if he picks a game that requires people to be it, I have a little bowl with their names in, and he picks a name and says who's going to be it. That way nobody says it's not fair. They all get a turn eventually. If I'm out with the student and having fun with them and then come back in and ease the transition into studies, it helps. If I'm involved, then it just helps to keep us balanced. Number two, be a good sport. Talked about character qualities. And recess is really where the rubber hits the road, isn't it? You really need to be there to observe what happens, especially if you're working on a certain character quality. And last year, my students had a habit of, just saying what they thought of each other. It wasn't necessarily good. And so we had a little system where if somebody told them a compliment or somebody encouraged them, they would come and tell me, and I would put a candy in the jar. Something happened when the jar got full, but anyway. Recess was a big time where they could fill up this candy jar because they had a lot of opportunities to encourage each other. And at the same time, they were learning how to play kickball. And if you teach lower grade, you know that teamwork is quite an experience when they get into first and second grade because they're pretty much individualistic. So they really have to work on that. And so I would tell them what kind of things they could do to encourage each other. And I told them what my expectations were before we went out. And then when we come back in, I maybe comment on their performance. If you depend on what I call the citizen's arrest system, you're going to be having tug of war all year, because if you haven't been there to see it, especially younger children, you don't know whose story is correct or who was imagining things. Or if you're there, you can be proactive and see who it is that always refuses to take caught or always insists that he was right. And you can see who most often is at fault. And also, students feel more secure when there's an authority figure that's there, and they can just refer to you as a coach. Games like prisoner's base, kickball, softball, these are good team activities where they can work on those skills. And it is a skill that they enjoy learning, how to play together and really learn how to excel in it at a game. Number three, get your exercise. I think this is one of the most important reasons to have recess. I insist that one recess has to be outside, even in the winter. And even if they complain, at least get outside to run around the school building if it's snowing. Just the fresh air, and I need fresh air too, and sunshine really does some good. And also, I like to have one game that's a running game. Running games like chain tag, line tag, 23 Eskimo. Let's see, what else did we play? Center line. These are good for endurance. And the point of the game isn't really to... Some of my students will come in and say, I only got caught one time this recess. And then I ask them, well, were you playing? Were you helping? Because the point of these games is just to see how long and how far you can run. And it really does develop their endurance. So I usually play with some of the games anyway, no timeout and no bases. Because if you're tired out, then take caught. That's not a problem. If it's a new game, they really need you to help. I usually explain a new game before we go out, tell them the rules, maybe draw a diagram on the blackboard. But then to really learn the nuances of the game, they need a model. And they'll soon pick up from you how to guard the line and line tag, or back a chain into a corner and chain tag, or 23 Eskimo, how to keep running around the circle while they're freeing you, someone. They don't always think of that themselves when they're playing by themselves. These are all organized games, and I like organized games because it's a skill that they can learn. But I also think that they need to initiate their own play sometimes. I usually like to have one free recess a day. And then they know that they don't have to play the game, or there might not even be a game, but they can form a group if they want to and play a game, or they can go bounce a ball, or sometimes if they look really unmotivated, I'll take a jump rope out and offer to turn the rope for them. And if they don't want to, that's fine. Sometimes they might play hopscotch. One year, some of my little girls, I looked out and here they were around a tree playing Ring Around the Rosie. So whatever. It was, if you observe, if you're there to see what's happening, you can pick out who has the imagination, who's a leader, who's a follower, who's really being ostracized, or who's just being left out because he wants to be. If you're there, they might even ask you to play Mother May I and want you to be the mother. And that's fine to have them come and ask you to participate in their little game. Do you have any comments or questions? If there's a game that I mentioned that you want to know how to play, I can explain them. I think many of them are common, but I didn't really write any out. I do have some copies of several uncommon games that they come from the Becca Health book I picked up one time. And if you need some new ideas, I'll put it up on the table, and then if you want to look through it, you can get some ideas, or I can make some copies if you want these for 40 cents for a packet.
How many of you relate to this scenario? You dismiss your students, and you're not necessarily dismissing them every room at the same time. And so the students stand and you say, row one, you may go. And so they file out and they're heading for the door, some of them more eagerly than others. And some of them are like, yes, let's go. And a few are just sort of lagging behind. So you're on recess duty. You walk out and the student says, what are we going to play today? And so you're quickly scrambling in your mind thinking, okay, let's see, what game shall we play? Something that will be fairly popular, something that won't get too many complaints, that the big kids won't hit the little kids. And so you say, all right, let's play Prisoner's Base. And everybody say, or a few people say, oh, no, Miss Beachy, we always play Prisoner's Base. And somebody else is saying, oh, but that's my favorite. Yeah, I'm so glad we're going to do that. And somebody else says, can we play Boys Against Girls? And somebody says, no, we don't want to play Boys Against Girls. It's not fair. And, well, this year, this past school year, we tried making some shortcuts to that whole thing by making a recess schedule. Now, we just took a empty calendar page and filling it at the beginning of every 6 weeks or so. This was the beginning of school last year. Now, here at this school, we had three elementary rooms, and so we would split up. First and second grade had the game at the top of each square, and grades 3 through 6 had the game at the bottom of each square, and so they had that for one complete day. And the students, as Patty was saying, would take turns picking the games, like for the whole 6 weeks. Okay, so this was the beginning of the school year, so first and second graders don't know how to play many games at all. So we have an asterisk beside the games that the teacher is going to have to explain how to play it. So on August 24th last year, first and second played Duck, Duck, Goose, and the 3 through 6 played Prisoner's Base. Now, this was really helpful for me because all I had to do was look at the recess schedule and know what we were going to play. They were posted. The students could figure out ahead of time what we were going to play that day. If there were going to be teams in the game, like here on October 1, first and second graders were going to play Dare Base, and so they were going to have teams. Later on in the year, we started listing the teams over here on the side, and then we just kept those teams for about 6 weeks. And then down here at the bottom, we had morning, noon, and afternoon recess. Noon recesses were always free recesses, like Ms. Musser was saying. And now I know that not all of you get to have an empty recess. You have to be on duty all the time. Well, we were able to split up there. And when you have different reset, when you have different teachers on duty at different times, the thing that I found was that it's really important to communicate with all your co-teachers about rules of games so that you're all having the same rules. Communicating with them about what happened when you were out with them. Coming in from at the end of recess, and I like to go to the teacher in the room and explain why this student might be coming in late. Maybe I kept him out to talk to him, or this student is in a bad attitude because of it. This happened at that recess. And another thing that we did was, for just the communication thing, to make it simple, we made red and blue flags, and whoever was on duty that day, blue meant we're going to play outside this recess, and red meant we're going to play inside. So since students were going out at different times, or not precisely at the same time, we did not have a bell at the beginning of recess, only at the end. They could just look at the door outside in the hall and find out where to go, to the gym or outside or where we were going to go. Several games that I liked that worked well. King's Base is one where you have a lot of people involved and there's a lot of running, a lot of different bases. It's where you have, well, some people call it trees, and you probably are familiar with it too. Having a lot of bases, the teacher decides how many students go on each base, and then you have the person who came out last is fresher than anyone else, may go and catch anyone, and try to conquer a whole base by catching them, either by going out last or by circling their base three times. And the winner is whoever gets the whole school onto your base. So that takes a while and is a fun one and gets people running. Another one that we played was Swim, Fish, Swim. And this is fine for indoors or outside. You have two baselines. And you start off with one it person in the middle. The it person can run any direction that he wants to, anywhere within the boundaries. And so all the other students line up on one side of the boundaries here. And the it person yells, "Swim, fish, swim." And they start running across. Now the it person runs around, catches them, and wherever they got caught, they are frozen. They have to stay at that spot. So they might have caught somebody there, might have caught somebody there. All right. So now these people are the seaweeds. They must stay there, but they are also it. And so they can only, they move like seaweeds. They can go one step, any direction, but only one step to be able to catch. So they are it, but they're stuck. And now the it person goes back to the middle. Everybody now is over on this side. It person yells, "Swim, fish, swim." And these people are running, but they have to remember that this it person is here. They may get forget it, or, you know, this person reaches out and catches somebody right there. Okay, so they go across. Maybe the it person caught another person there, and that person didn't catch anybody. Okay, so now they're all on this side, yell, "Swim, fish, swim." And after a while, the fish, or the students, are having to dodge between all of these people, and there is strategy to it because the it person is going to try to get people caught in a cluster, in a group, in a row across here to make it harder for the fish to get through. And one thing that I like about it is that we made the rule that the last person caught is it the next time, instead of the first person caught is it the next time. I remember what it was like being in school, and I just, you know, pom pom pull away or something like that. And if you're a slow runner, you get caught first, and that means you have to be it the next time, and then you're not going to catch anybody. And so if you make the last person caught to be it the next time, they love the challenge of getting through all the seaweed and getting across. But that also means that they'll be it if they're the last person caught. And then they're a good runner. They're fast, and they love to be it, too. So that's a good game for cooperation. And what do we do about playground squabbles? What do we do when students are not having good attitude? And I don't really like to talk about this because it's just way too easy as a teacher to be too lazy and uninvolved to care about what happens out at recess. But it definitely is worth your time to pull that child aside and talk to them about their attitude, even make them go into their teacher, go into the room, because when they come in, and are especially really competitive students, come in and they're upset about what happened at recess, the next class period is just tainted with that angry student. And it is hard for them to calm down and even start thinking about history. They're still thinking about how unfair it was that so-and-so happened. So pulling them out of a game is totally kosher. And talking to them about what's going on, not just saying, you may not be angry, and explaining to them that you're disappointed in them and that cooperation is going to make the whole recess go a lot better for everyone, and punishment as it needs to happen. And then there again, the communication with the other co-teachers when you come in. I think that my favorite thing about elementary recess is just the chance to build relationships with the students. And that's just because I'm more a people person than an athletic person. And it's so rewarding to have a shy little first grader come up, and we're on our way in from recess, and she grabs my hand and she wants to tell me about what happened last night. Or one of the sixth grade boys, you know, just sort of hanging back and wanting to walk in with me and wanting to tell me about what's next, what they're excited about in their next class or whatever. And so elementary recess can be a very rewarding thing. All right. Back to Smollett.
Well, thank you for sharing those. And again, just a reminder to those of you out there, we'd love to hear your ideas as well. How many of you knew all those games they mentioned? You knew all of those. There you go. I imagine you know a few that we don't know. Okay. Let's think together just for a moment about upper grades, recess. And if your experience is like mine, over lunch there is a recess in high school. We don't have any other recess planned in junior high and high school except for the lunch break, which is about 30 minutes. And that includes eating time. So it's not a great deal of time. School where I taught in Indiana, we had a half hour after eating time, and we had 15 minutes in the morning as well. And those times, it's easy as a teacher. You heard Jonas saying this morning about not having time for students. It's easy to say, okay, I get 15 minutes to myself, they run out the door, and you have time to catch up a little something, make a photocopy, write a quiz, whatever. Well, recess in that sense becomes sort of a filler, a break, a change of pace. And I want to just suggest that recess, especially in upper grades, and this is true all through, you heard these people talking about it as well, is a great way to build relationship. In the classroom, you're calling the shots, you're the teacher, you plan what happens, usually. You get out on the recess and you begin to play the game with the student. You feel the dynamics change. Suddenly, they're chasing you. They're going to get you, okay? Or you're chasing them, or there's an involuntary shriek comes out of your mouth because you're going to get caught. You get surprised. What do they see? They see a more complete human side of you. And what I see inevitably is that the respect of the teacher always goes up. Just because they saw you go sprawling doesn't mean that they think, they don't write you off as a teacher. It increases their respect for you, especially if you're doing well in the classroom. So I just really encourage you, and it's difficult. I don't do this so well either. It takes constant vigilance on my part, try to get out, especially since I'm here and have responsibility outside of the school. I find it very difficult to get out there to noon break and play with them. But the times I do are always very positive. Students welcome it. It's almost like students welcome that presence of a teacher. And everybody avoids conflict a little bit more, I think. I think they work harder to get along. And there's someone there to take care of things that come up. And it seems that people are relaxed. And I think they have more fun, actually, with the teacher there. They might try to let on like they have more fun when you're not there because they can do what we want. But I don't think that's true. Now, Another thing you can model as a teacher is good sportsmanship. And I want to mention more about this in phys ed, but I'm just naturally competitive enough that if I'm in the middle of a good game and I'm losing, you know, I'm trying pretty hard to win. And it's taken me a long time to keep my temper out of that equation. Okay? And so it's a tremendous opportunity for them to see you in, under the heat a little bit and see how you respond. And I don't think you've lost a lot if they see you. I don't know what you think is terrible, but I've already missed a shot, a crucial basket or something, and I wanted to make that really bad. And you know, you can say, well, that's showing some emotion that maybe isn't good, and I've probably done worse than that. But I really think their respect for me goes up because they know when I talk to them about good sportsmanship, they've seen me. They know. So I think it gives me an ear when I talk to them. Just an idea on games. I'm sure there's lots of ways you plan it. You heard these people talk about teachers planning them. Students always have ideas. I think it can be helpful for you simply to make a schedule. Even the upper grades suggest that certain days, for instance, a lot of times if you have enough guys that they just want to play basketball all winter long, at noon break, I see a few eyes being rolled here. So you can say, hey, okay, guys, look, Tuesdays and Thursdays, volleyball day. Okay, we're going to play volleyball those days, and everybody plays. And if you can't be out there, that's one way you can exercise a good role in the whole process. Another way to do it is get your student council involved, or get a group of students who do well or who need some exercise and leadership. Get them out there and say, okay, you three plan the games for next month. And go at it that way. Depending on your student body, you don't need to do either one of those. They just do really well. It's a couple natural leaders, people give and take, good relationships. They move right out and do really well with it. So I think you just need to know your students, need to know what works for you. Phys ed for elementary is something we don't normally think about. We're going to do it this year in our school, is have 2 days a week, have an hour in the afternoon where we have phys ed, and then we're cutting down on afternoon recess other days. It does a couple things. It gives students a chance to learn a game really well, like softball. What we're finding is that I'm getting in junior high and high school, these people don't know how to play softball. Now, that's foreign to me. I grew up playing softball, but I guess with the gym coming on, there's more options, you know. So what we want to do is teach a few games like that and teach them well beginning in elementary. It also gives a few of our teachers an extra period a day because our teachers have other responsibilities around here besides the classroom. That is very helpful to give them an extra period a day. So that's what we're doing with phys ed in the elementary. Phys ed in the high school. Again, I have a few purposes here because they're more specific. I've already covered some of it, so I'll just mention them briefly. Teaching a healthy use of the body, and by this I simply mean the discipline and joy of coordination and physical exertion. I don't know what to call it, except if you've really played hard and you've learned to play a sport decently well, you've learned this, the joy of being coordinated enough to dribble a ball through a group of guys and put it up in. I mean, there's just something really rewarding about that. Now, it took something to get there. I don't think it's wrong to enjoy that. Notice that's different than being arrogant. It's different than doing it all the time and not letting anybody else have a chance at doing it. But there is a reward of doing that. There's also the joy and discipline of physical exertion, just disciplining yourself to work hard physically in some kind of exercise. I know when I worked in the factory and I come home and go jogging, I've been in the factory 9, 10, 11 hours, and I come home and it's the last thing I felt like doing is putting my running shoes on and hitting the door and run a couple miles. I thought, well, I've worked hard all day. I don't need these 2 or 3 miles. You know what? I get out there and 5 minutes into my run, if you could watch me, you'd probably see me doing something like this because it felt so good just to get out there and run. And you know what? I came back after those long days and I felt good. I didn't feel nearly as exhausted, nearly as drained. It was It re-energized me emotionally, physically, all those ways. So there is a discipline and joy in all that. Number two, teaching enjoyable, recreating games. I mentioned a little bit about this. There's nothing like teamwork. Someone has said that games are life. And the reason we like games, the reason the human race is still running races, is because there's something about a race that we connect with. And we find ourselves using that analogy in all of life. And we can recreate things. It's a healthy way to get to know people, to experience other people, and to learn how to get along with people, how to work together. And number three, you equip for a life of healthy living. And I mentioned about this earlier, that our lifestyles are just much, much different. We don't walk to town anymore. I sometimes walk to work, but I have a quarter mile. It takes me 5 minutes. Sometimes I think that takes too long. I wish I had my car. I just drive home. Don't want to walk that far. But I'll run 2 miles. Explain that one. Okay. Planning instruction to class. If you just pull your high school phys ed syllabus, it's just an example here of how you could plan your class. The more you plan at the beginning of the year, the less you have to be creative in the midst of the duress and stress of the school year. So this has been very helpful. A description of the class, very basic. Could maybe add a few things in there. You have when it's going to happen. You have the textbooks. And I don't have any in mine. Equipment and materials the student will need. By the way, the student gets a copy of this. And I have those listed there. I have some objectives. I say the student will be able to. And I list a number of things there. I have requirements and standards. Here's what you have to do in my class. And then I tell them on the back how it's going to be graded. And they know right up front. And then you see the calendar. And I found it tremendously freeing. I haven't always done this, but I found it tremendously freeing to list every class period that's going to happen in that school year. And I put down what I plan to have happening that day in class. And so it's really not as difficult as you might think. Once you get looking at that schedule and you write them all out and you know about what you want to do, what needs to happen in terms of big picture, you just begin to flesh it out. I'll go over that in more detail. Just hang on to that a little bit. I'll go over that in more detail. One of the things you need to do when you plan and structure your class, and we haven't talked about this much, is what does your community expect in terms of sports? Sometimes that's a bad word in our churches and communities, is the word sports. Well, I think you need to look honestly, okay, ask your board, ask your principal, ask your parents, okay, just exactly what do you want your child to do? Last year was the first time that I had my students run a mile every class period. And I honestly thought I might get a few parents to get on my case. I was kind of braced for a few parents to call and say, you know, what in the world are you trying to prove? Running a mile every period. I mean, do they have to do that every class period? Well, you know what? I had three parents tell me, you know, I'm so glad you're doing that. My child needs that. Okay? So I was surprised. I think that could vary. Some places they would see that as an undue emphasis on physical fitness. What's the point? What are you trying to do? Train marathon runners? You know? Well, I think you have to know the expectations of your community. The whole thing you'll see on my schedule here, the whole thing of tournaments. I have school tournaments where we divide the fellows into two teams, divide the girls into two teams, and we have a tournament between those two teams for each of the sports that we practice. Okay? In some schools, that may not be acceptable. I think you have to know that and work within that framework. But I think there's things you can do to accomplish some good goals in terms of physical fitness. You don't have to do that. But I think you need to be aware of those and work within those. what I find is that those limitations often force me to be creative and do things I wouldn't have thought about otherwise. So I think there's ways to deal with those. Letter C, equipment. I just list, it's a starting list. There's a host. If you ever look through a phys ed catalog, you know there's just a host of things you can buy if you have the money for phys ed. A few basics, balls, and I could mention bats, balls, nets, cones, jump rope, stopwatches, tabletop, scoreboards, and then track and field. I list as a whole separate thing. Track and field equipment would be things like a shot put, discus, high jump equipment, things like that. I've purchased things like frisbees to use on a student day when we take a half a day or a day and go to a local state park and do some devotional things and play a lot of games. We take frisbee and play frisbee football or something like that. So some of those things are all it's great equipment to use. Procedures, what do I do in class? First thing I always do is warm-ups. And I thought, you know, we could take a lot of time here and go through warm-ups. You can find them in a lot of books. You probably know a few yourself just from experience and watching other people. I'm not going to go over those, but you do need to do them. And one of the things is when a child is young or a young person, warm-ups are probably less essential to prevent injury than later in life. And so you teach them that warm-ups are not just to prevent injury, which that's legitimate. If it's a cold day outside and you take them out after half a day, all day in class, and it's 40 degrees outside and you start off with wind sprints, you know, running 40 or 50, 60-yard dashes, good chance somebody's going to pop a muscle just because of the temperature and they haven't warmed up. Okay? So teaching them just a few basic stretches, and I always tell them a few basic things, your hamstrings, back of the thighs, you know, the back, and a few muscles like that. Teach them a few and tell them, especially the older you get, depending on what work you do, you're going to need to do these before you exercise, or you're going to pull a ligament, pop a tendon, pull a muscle, something. And there's a lot of parents that would, you know, we talk about phys ed, and dad says, oh, let me show how far I can bend over. And I say, wait a minute, are you serious? Oh, yes, that's it, no more. Okay, well, I just think that's terrible. He's a ripe for some kind of injury because he can't bend over. I mean, how many times do you have to, you know, suddenly grab something? It's not going to happen for him, or else he's going to pop something. He's right for back injury. So I just think it's just common sense fitness. Tell them a few things. Give them a few tools that they can take later into life. I have a little routine I run through every morning. I don't miss a day because I have some back problems. So I go through it all the time to strengthen my back and to stay flexible. So flexibility equals less injury. That's one bottom line that you can keep in head. Flexibility equals less injury. And telling them that can help tremendously. So warm-ups. Second thing is fitness. And as you can see on the syllabus, this past year I started having students, we run a mile each class period. Every time. Now, I didn't know how this was going to go, but I handed the syllabus out at the beginning of the year, and they got a chance to look at that and deal with it emotionally, mentally, and spiritually the first day of class, okay? So they saw that, and there were a few groans, and, you know, you got to be kidding. But, you know, I heard very little about it the rest of the year, especially after it became obvious that we do this every time. Now, I think one day we cut it down to a half mile. I think it was really nasty when we ran in the gym. We wanted to get some things done, so we didn't do it. But we did that even during the tournaments. We took the first 20 minutes and did warm-ups and ran the mile. Even though it was tournament, everybody wanted to be fresh and energized for the game. One thing, they had a quicker recovery time by winter, by the time the tournaments came around. They had a quicker recovery time, so they didn't mind the mile as much. And everybody does the same thing, so it's an even equation for everybody in the game. So I recommended that. Another thing we did is we did as many push-ups as possible in 1 minute each class period. We came in from running. When everybody came in, usually if you were done first, you got a few minutes to catch your breath, wait for everybody else to catch up, and then we said, okay, we'll do push-ups. And I always had my stopwatch there, and we did them for 1 minute. And then we got in with push-ups. We paired up with partners, and one person holds the feet, and the other people do the sit-ups. And we switch, do another minute, sit-ups for the other people. And so that was the fitness component. Three things. I mean, you could argue that there are other areas of the body that need to be developed, but those were the three that we focused on. Get some cardiovascular exercise, get some running going, do the push-ups, upper body strength, sit-ups, upper body strength. Also, the rationale for the sit-ups there, if you have strong abdominals, you get less back injuries as well. So just developing those. And I was amazed how students really gave themselves to that 1 minute of push-ups or 1 minute of sit-ups. They really went for it. They wanted to see how many they could do. Now, I had a few slackers, and I always did it with them, by the way, so I had to always check around as I was doing push-ups to make sure all the guys were doing it, because I had a few who would, you know, they'd do five and then wait, you know, and then do five more and wait. But, you know, there's things like extra laps or extra push-ups that take care of that. So things you can watch for there. But I did ask them to give their absolute best effort in each class period. And I said, that's part of your grade. 1/4 of your grade is how much effort do I see you putting into whatever it is that we're doing? And you can learn how to give yourself to something you don't feel like doing. And then that's how they're going to experience the reward of physical exertion, is to say, hey, you know, that felt pretty good. By the time I got done, I was fine. And that's how I try to deal with the complaining as well. I try to maintain a positive momentum and, you know, come on, let's go, and we hit it. We don't wait around for people to say how they feel, okay, in phys ed. I didn't feel like running. 2 o'clock is the worst time of day for me to run. I hate running at 2 o'clock. 6 o'clock in the morning is much, much better. So is 9 o'clock at night. But not 2 in the afternoon. That's my worst time of day. But you do it. Okay? You do it. And I told them that. I said, look, folks, I'll be right up front. I hate to run this time of day, but we're going to do it. So here we go. And so it's a way to get, it's amazing how that can cut down on the attitude problems. The other thing I asked of them was to control the temper in game situations, demonstrating self-control and positive focus. I told my guys, and you know how competitive you are in high school, especially guys, and I found that ladies can be as well. The quickest way to take yourself out of the game, if your team is a few points behind and you want to win, just start letting yourself get upset. And I guarantee you, your game will deteriorate. Okay? It's just not going to be as good. And so I tried to, and I made the comparison. I said, guys, there'll be a lot of times in life that's going to be the same way. If you can maintain your attitude and your focus on what needs to be done, and what are the priorities? This game, I said, you know what? At the end of this game, I want you walking out of here, and I want you to be buddies when you walk out. That's how you need to play this game. You need to learn how to give it your best shot and walk out and give the best guy on the other team a slap on the back and say, good game. If you can't do that, we have a problem. And what I tell my students is that if that doesn't happen and you can't maintain that, you have to sit out. Now, that's really tough for me. I like to be a nice guy. It's tough for me to tell people, okay, that's it. You know, sit down over there and ride that one out. Done it a few times. And tremendous, it makes a difference. I had one guy one time, I turned my back on the team. I was keeping an eye on the guys at one end and the girls on the other, and two guys just lit into each other. I've never had that happen at my Christian school, where two guys just light into each other and start pounding. Again, I think those situations can be made into positive situations just by stopping everything. You have to sit out, and then we talk about what happened, and talk about it in terms of their whole life and not just the game. Okay, what I did with the fitness as well is schedule fitness tests and fitness days into my year calendar. So you look back there, first 2 days of phys ed, what we did were fitness tests. And you can find these. I have some resources to show you, and I think we're going to run out of time here. You can find these in a number of different places. But fitness tests, and then at the end of each quarter, we had a fitness test and a skill test. The fitness test was a timed event on the mile and the other fitness things that we did, whether it was how many or how long it took you to do them. And then a skill test. We had a few basic skills we worked on for that sport, and then we had them do 10 in a row, or whatever it was that may have been the skill for that particular sport. And then you can just look down through there, schedule in the days for that particular sport. But you see at the end of each quarter, the fitness test and skill test. And you know, at the end of basketball tournament, it was hard even for me to take a day out to do fitness tests. I mean, I would have rather played basketball with them or else allow them to play. But it kept it focused on the purpose of the class and what it wanted to accomplish. The other thing we did was circuit training. How many of you do circuit training in your school? Any of you that teach high school circuit training? Basically, what this is that I set up a series of stations, anywhere from 8 to 12 stations, and we spend, especially after the first of the year, I do this in combination with basketball, I set up in the first part of the class, we do a series of stations. And so at this station, this is called the mountain climber. And you could work yourself up to different levels. Okay? And so basically the position was you put your hands and feet on the floor, 1 foot forward, keeping your hands stationary, move feet in rapid climbing or stepping motion. So you're down there and you're moving your feet back and forth as fast as you can. And be sure to bring feet way up. So you take big steps. You move your feet. 1 foot goes way back, 1 foot goes way forward. You're doing this back and forth. It really works the lower back and the thighs. And you can do 20, you can do 26, you do 32, 40. Now, if I just had that exercise, we could do a lot of them. However, with 10 stations, different exercises. The next station might be 3 laps. The next station might be 40 jump ropes, 40 skips, the jump rope. Next station might be dribbling around chairs. The next station might be a shuttle run where in the lane, underneath the hoop there, you run sideways and touch the side of the lane. You run, shuttle over to one side, bend down, touch the line, shuttle the next, and you do 10 or 20 repetitions of those. So, till you get around that station, you've worked your entire body. Another one is push-ups, sit-ups are all part of those stations as well. So you've worked your entire body, and we tell them, today I want everybody to do 3 laps on level 1 when we start out. 3 laps on level 1. And we just work our way up. Tremendous fitness exercise. And sometimes it helps just to have some music going. A good Mozart tape or something that's a little more up-tempo. Good. I've even had good a cappella choral CDs out there that somehow just help you raise the level of energy in the room and help students give it their best shot. Those things can be excellent exercise. That's how we deal with fitness. Games. There's all kinds of books out there. I've been looking for the last several years for a series of books that I had in Indiana when I taught at United Christian School that showed basic drills and the rules in pictures. It's an excellent book. I haven't been able to find them anywhere. But there are all kinds of books available. You can go even to Walden Books in your mall or Barnes & Noble, some of those places, and find books like this on different sports. Here's one on softball. Here's one on volleyball. Okay, what they do is in a fairly abbreviated, yet it's detailed enough that you can learn a lot about the game. They spell out the rules. They show a lot of pictures how it's done. They give you some drills, all those things. Gopher K catalog has a lot of books. There's several pages in here of books of all kinds of games, rule books, all kinds of things that you can purchase, have exercises, things. How many of you get mailings about the President's Fitness Challenge? Get mailings in your school? A couple of you? I've never taken part in it, but the book has, it's abbreviated, has pages of exercises and brief explanations on how they test fitness. What I find that most of my students in my school could not do this fitness test. Okay? Really, in not very good physical condition at all. This is considered a good physical condition, and most of our students aren't there. So, great exercises, diagrams, tell you how it's done. They have distances and age breakdown for age 6. They have a boy should be able to do 33 curl-ups in 1 minute at age 6. Well, that's pretty good. 6-year-old. He should be able to do a shuttle run in 12. He should be able to do a 12.1 second shuttle run, and they explain what that shuttle run is like. They have a sit and reach exercise. They say a 6-year-old should be able to run a mile in 10 minutes and 15 seconds. Okay, that's pretty good. That's pretty good. To be able to do 2 pull-ups, should be able to do 9 right-angle push-ups. So that's age 6. Age 17, 8.7 second shuttle run. They should be able to do the mile in 6 minutes, 6 seconds. Do 13 pull-ups, 53 push-ups. So, it's a good baseline, and it's a great tool from which to structure your class. If you want to say, okay, I want to do a fitness section in my class this year, here's some great ideas. I think I have that number on your handout, right? Put that phone number down there under resources, I believe. Okay, several of the books that you'll find in catalogs. This is one on sports rules for 54 different sports. The essential rules, a basic explanation, a few pictures. For those, you'll find if you have tournaments, you better know a few rules and agree on them ahead of time, or there's going to be some conflict. This is an excellent book. I would just highly recommend it. I'll leave it up here for you to look at afterward. Quality Lesson Plans for Secondary Physical Education. Now, this has single-day lessons. Let's say you get a rainy day and you don't have a gym. You've been out playing, you don't have a gym, and you need an idea for phys ed. It has a number of single-day lessons. Some of those would require a gym, but not all of them would. It has a fitness unit. It explains body mass index. It tells you, and it's kind of interesting. I've had students do this. I don't do it every year, but take their weight, measure their height, and just look at their weight for their height, and also take a few measurements. And let them know just where they are with that. It has some major units on a number of different sports. Has a warm-up activity section in it. Just a good all-around secondary phys ed book. A lot of great ideas. It also, what I like about this, it breaks each sport down into specific skills. It's one thing to get everybody out there. It's okay, we're going to learn to play basketball today. And so we get out there and we play 2 teams and we play the entire period. Try to give a few pointers here and there. You'll learn a few things, but you can break it down into teachable units, teachable skills, teach them a few skills, and really enhance their ability to enjoy the game. And it's one of the objectives I have is to enable young people to really enjoy a game, to learn it well enough to really enjoy it. Watch a group of students, if they don't know how to do this, or a group of parents, try to play a game. And I'm a firm believer, everybody can have fun if you put your mind to it and you don't care how good you are. You just give it your best shot and go for it. But you'll notice people that aren't real coordinated, have not had the opportunity for this kind of class, they're the first ones to say, I just want to sit out. I guarantee you everybody, I mean, you heard Ms. Beachy say that she never enjoyed physical activity that much. Everybody can learn to enjoy it and learn to enjoy doing it, have a good time. You don't have to feel like you're the odd person out. I think there's a lot to be learned in a good phys ed class. I've even had my students who are the least inclined to physical activity still take some real satisfaction in watching their fitness tests climb, watching their times improve, and all that. So just encourage you to do that. Just a little bit on field events. How many of you have field events in it the last day of school or toward the end of the school year? No one? One? Two? Okay, so you know a little bit about this. I'll leave some things up here for you to look at. Some events that we have. We did it at this school for the first time last year. Again, the objection might be raised, well, we're emphasizing sports. What we do in our school is to divide the entire student body up into three teams. If you have big enough school, you may need four. Maybe you only want to do two. And grades 1 to 12 are represented on each team. And on the day of the events, each person wears their little color tag. So whenever there's a race or an event, people line up. It's obvious to everybody what team they're on. Everybody gets cheered for. Everybody gets encouraged. I've seen very little very few people being devastated at losing a race. What it does, it develops a tremendous amount of school spirit. Its parents thoroughly enjoy it. And it's just a time, you know, every child loves to show mom and dad how fast they can run, how far they can throw the ball, all those things. It's an opportunity for them to do that. And, children talking about, so-and-so's the fastest in our class, and I can run faster than so-and-so, but so-and-so's faster than me. It's just a fun day to see all of that. And again, it's an opportunity to teach children that you cheer for everybody. And I take a few minutes before at the beginning of this day to tell students that it's not who wins, it's how hard you tried and that the fact that you didn't quit. And so I've seen people come in way behind, but they didn't quit, and they got a lot of encouragement just for doing that. So just some ideas there on field events. I'm sorry I've taken you so long. Did you have any ideas? I know you're hot and a little drowsy there, a few of you. What are you thinking there? Any ideas for games? Something that's worked well for you in your class? Love to hear some ideas. I'm sure some of you I know have been teaching a while. I'm sure you have some good ideas. Maybe you have a question about the rationale. I mean, I'd be happy to discuss anything. Wendell. We do it 7 through 12. Yeah. Muscular dystrophy. I don't know how advanced it is. Well, it could be things like keeping score, keeping stats in a basketball game. Especially if you find ways to get the rest of the students to rally around them, they could feel very much a part of that whole activity. I've never had that. What have you done? Oh, that's great. Wow. How have students treated them? Any other ideas about that? Handling students who are handicapped. It's an excellent question. Okay. Any others? Any other questions or ideas?
All this stuff you're talking about, this school visit, do you do all that stuff with girls and boys?
Yes, I do.
Together?
together. Yes, I do. That's the first time I've had to do that. Because we've had small class sizes, haven't had people available, I've taught both at the same time. In Indiana, we had a lady teacher teach the girls. A few things I've done, when we do leg stretches and things, first day of class, I just say, guys, face that way, ladies the other way, and we do the stretches. And that's worked well for us. It's just how we do it. So it's pretty matter of fact after that. So it's just how we do it. But the running, you know, some of the girls, it's a real challenge. I have one gal who really does well with the running, and a number of them do fine. I know the girls aren't all last, you know, so it's, it seems to be fine. What did you have a specific area that was questionable for you?
How did you work your team exactly on a field day?
Okay.
How was your competition set up? How was that?
Okay. Yeah, I didn't say much about that. Basically, what we do is we have a number of events. We have dashes and we have relays. We have shot put. We have long jump, we have high jump, jump rope, sack race, egg race, all kinds of events. Okay. Then we have each student is required to sign up for at least three. You have to sign up for at least three events, and then each teacher, just by the end of the year, they know the physical ability of each student. They divide their students. They try to divide their classroom evenly on those three or four teams. And then I just take and combine them all and show a few people, make sure we're not doing something really stilted, and try to keep them basically even. And what we do then is I call McDonald's and ask if they would be willing to give a free Big Mac coupon for my winning team. And they said they would. So had a few left over if you want one. But so that's what they did. They just gave us those, and we handed those out the last day. Yeah. Right. That's right. Okay, thank you. Yeah, so for the 100-yard dash, we had a dash for grades 10 to 12 and grades 7 to 9, grades 5 and 6, grades 3 and 4, grades 1 and 2. Okay, so that dash ran that many times, but for those different ages. And then if you got a first place, you got 3 points on this relay team that I showed you. If you got second place, you got two. If you made third place, you got 1 point. And then you just compile the points, and whichever team has the most points wins the Big Mac coupon. So, yeah. Any other questions on that, or does that answer your question, how we set that up?
You ever try like a relay race?
We did batons.
Yeah.
Yeah, we did the 440 relay, and there I always have to require them. I never had enough just to say whoever wants to, because you have to have at least so many people to make it worthwhile. But yes, we've done that. That's always a fun race. Have you done it as well?
No, I okay. Was my first year teaching, but when I was
young. Okay. Yeah. Yes. It is. If you can get someone to lay out a track for you, what we did in Indiana was one of the teachers, one of the principals there, actually went out and measured it out. The track itself was 330 yards around. It was an oval track. And then he put concrete markers down at ground level so you could mow over them all around there, so that each year you went to remeasure the track. Then usually I had a high school student go out and mow that track. We mowed our lanes in around the oval. He have a radius in there and would tie a rope to his push mower and go around that radius. And we would have four lanes around that track. Well, you know that 330 yards, the outside lane is a lot further than the inside. So what we would do then is have our starting lines for each lane for the relay race. So we measured each track so that the distance around, so that the starting line was the same, but starting points for each team. So you would have runners for starting in a sort of a sprayed formation for their distance, but they would end at the finish line. So yeah, it was a lot of fun. It was a good race. Here we're having a tough time finding a big enough flat area to do a track. It's part of the challenge of living in Pennsylvania.
For the most current Faith Builders recordings, visit christianlearning.org. And for more free resources that support teaching and learning, visit the docforlearning.org.